accession number 27338, Reel 10.
Let's talk about what you can recall of the work that you were to undertake in Perth on your return after your experience in New Guinea.
Well, we really had no idea what was in store for us, because we never knew the army had decided. So we're just awaiting instructions.
Okay, well, following the instructions, what did your work entail?
Going back to nursing at Hollywood.
What was that like?
Well, that was rather frustrating, but that was the first time we were really conscious of rank. And if you were promoted to, say, even a corporal, as I was, you couldn't nurse in the wards then. You had to do clerical work. So I was fortunate to be a typist and worked in the X-ray department, which was very busy, of course, and I had a wonderful doctor there in charge, a brilliant radiologist. He'd lost his own arm in New Guinea, apparently, and wasn't able to save it because he couldn't get anyone to tie the tourniquet. Donnan.
We talked about how you were to live out the rest of the war, then, mainly in a clerical capacity. Would that be...
Well, I was very happy there because it was interesting and challenging work. But we didn't know what the future was, and I was getting a bit frustrated. And when I happened to go and see one of my Red Cross friends, she said that they were very anxious to have Red Cross Field Force to go overseas. And because we were trained nurses, we'd be very suitable for the job. So several of us in all the states were joined Red Cross Field Force, where you could be sent anywhere. And then I was sent to Brisbane to the Red Bank Hospital there, the military hospital. And that was when we heard about the victory in the Pacific.
Do you recall the victory in Europe, VE Day?
Yes. I was in Perth at the time, and I remember meeting some of the Air Force men that had a club then, and we all felt terribly relieved.
Sorry. It's okay. What did you do? Presumably there were celebrations at the club?
Well, they weren't very... It was more relief than celebration, because we knew that we had a long way to go.
I wanted you to read to me, if you could, the extracts from the 7th of May, 1945.
On the 7th of May, 45, Jean and I worked all day. Ken out in the afternoon, Ron out in the afternoon. Peace with Germany at 8 p.m. Johnny Craig came down for tea and had most pleasant evening, like old times. Wanda French rang, letters from Pat Wheatman. Tuesday the 8th of May, Vicky not in, working at Hollywood. Joan missed lunch with me, letters from Dennis and Jerry Wilde, special papers out, called to see Wanda and Mara and had tea and worked. Perth pretty quiet, really. Joan MB rang. Wednesday the 9th of May, 45. Messed round, Picky rang inviting us to dinner at the club. Jean came down and we worked all afternoon. Special holiday, Jean and I called Donnan's and then for Picky and met Athol Snook, Lieutenant Commander Dash and Lieutenant Hugo. Some Qantas types also. Then squadron leader and Ray, Hugo and Denton, Flying Officer Waters and a few squadron leaders. Lovely tea and John Craig and then went to Gwen Colbatch's flat and spent pleasant evening.
Joan, can we talk about the coming of the end of the war with Japan and how you came then to work for the Formidable, the HMS Formidable crew?
Well, I was at Red Bank when peace was declared, and I think we were just so overwhelmed and relieved that we were very quietly celebrating it. But in Brisbane, we went into Brisbane, I went in with another friend, and we were so shocked at the behaviour of all these young people. It seemed to be no feeling in it, that we just thought we'd go back to our own. She was of the Red Cross and I was out at Red Bank. So we had a quiet evening then. It was so overwhelming, the relief.
You were to become a member of the Red Cross, I understand, at this time, am I right?
I transferred to the Red Cross when I was in Perth at the Hollywood Hospital, and they were wanting some trained girls to be appointed as field officers, where we could be sent anywhere. And I was lucky enough to be one of them selected because of the background.
Did it require any further training or any description?
Yes, we had to go to a special school in Melbourne where we were indoctrinated with realms of how to treat prisoners of war and the Red Cross regulations, and we all had to learn handwork to teach the soldiers when they were recuperating.
What did you know of the life that some of the Australian servicemen had experienced at the hands of the Japanese?
Well, we didn't know as much as we know now. We just heard that there were terrible atrocities, and it's hard to know what you remember then and what you've heard since.
Mm. At the time, do you recall what people were saying to you in regard to the sorts of things you would need to keep in mind when dealing with POWs or ex-POWs?
Well, the Red Cross was very thorough with all the lectures and how to treat them. And then at Red Bank, we did have a little experience with the prisoners of war, one who were brought back with early bits when they were very, very skinny and looked terrible. But it's amazing how quickly, with good food, they seem to come good.
Mm. You were to join the Formidable. Let's discuss that. What did that involve?
Well, at the time, I was a little bit disappointed because we were due at Red Bank to join one of the biggest general hospitals, which was being formed, and we'd all made our arrangements to celebrate that. And I had this notice that I had to go, been appointed to the ship and had to go to Sydney. So then I went down and there was a terrific amount of trouble getting visas and getting the army to let us go, and the Red Cross did all that work. And new passports and more needles.
Did you ever feel at this time, given that the war was over not only with England, with the Germans, but also with the Japanese, that you'd done your bit, that you'd done enough, and that this was now time for you to go home and just relax?
I think we realised you couldn't just walk out straight away, that there was still a lot to be done, because we took it for granted that we'd have to go to places like Redbank and Queensland or wherever we were sent, because we hadn't been in the field force very long then.
So let's talk then about the formidable. What was it like to join the crew, to join the ship?
I think it was most unusual, but it was rather scary because we didn't know what was in store for us. But I think when you've got lines of duty delegated, that, you know, that comforts you, or you just do as you're told. And we had a meeting on the ship with the captain and the few officers who, you know, who had to meet us and explain what we were going.
You managed to find the dates that you were involved with the cruise of HMS Formidable. Can you read what you've found out for us?
Well, we left Sydney on the 19th of September, and from there we went to Leyte in Manila, where we must have collected our troops, and then taken them back to Sydney. We refurbished and had a few days in Sydney and set off for Rabaul, Singapore, Trincomalee, Bombay. And we took the prisoners of war from Singapore to Bombay. I'm pretty sure that's right. And then Batavia, we brought troops, Australian troops waiting to be repatriated back to, calling it Moratai, and then Sydney and disembarking.
In relation to your time on board ship, a 3 month period, roughly, what was the time like for you? The war's over and you're heading off to sort of help wind things up, as it were. What was it like to be on board such a cruise?
Well, it was very interesting, but we still had a big job to do, because the prisoners of war, the Red Cross, the reason we were sent was to look after them and their comforts and make sure that they had an adequate food and clothing and were able to contact home, Australia. So their time was taken, so busy looking after the prisoners of war, that we still had a big way to go.
What was the general state of health of the average POW?
Well, when we got them on board, they had already been staging for a short time, and the Red Cross had been looking after them, especially in Moratai. And especially in Moratai and Singapore, they had teams of women in the Red Cross there. And by that, they didn't let anyone come home on the ship who wasn't sort of reasonably fit. I mean, fit, we still had 200 bed patients, but if they were really ill, they'd been flown back and gone to hospital. But they fed, had been fed, and it's remarkable how quickly they seemed to recover when they had good food.
What was the general sort of state of morale on board ship?
Oh, excitement to be on board and to be so well looked after by the Brits. They thought that they were wonderful.
Evidently the POWs were relieved to be still alive, presumably. Did they ever speak to you about their experiences?
Not in detail, because you're just so busy, you don't have much time to sit down and talk. We're busy organising parties, and we had a special room for the Red Cross where they'd come in and make inquiries and get some work to do, handwork. They were very interested, especially the Indians, in making bags and belts and macrame work to take home to their families. And they were all issued every day with goods from the Red Cross. And they used to line up on the flight deck and queue past, so that's all time-consuming.
You're mentioning that the Indians actually cooked their own food at one point. Can you tell us that story?
I don't know if they cooked, but they had these big cook trucks up on the flight deck, and we could smell their curry or their rich, strange smell. It was a bit overpowering. But of course they had been on normal rations before that. So, I mean, they could survive on that. But they were very happy to have their own food.
What was it like to be seeing all of these different places?
Do you mean when we went
that
ashore?
The views of these places, seeing places like Singapore.
Well, I remember seeing the famous hotel in Singapore and thinking, well, you know, I've seen that, it's quite interesting. But it was some of the places like Manila the harbour was absolutely packed with wrecks of ships, and we had a terrific scare one day for the tornado, whatever it was coming, and the ship had to leave the wharf and leave us ashore with the Red Cross and go out to sea because there was this typhoon coming. But Manila was so badly damaged, it looked all right in the distance. When you got there, all the buildings were just skeletons, and there was devastation there.
What was it like to see this destruction, to see what the world was like now that the war was over?
Well, you just thought it was terrible, but, I mean, you just take it for granted.
To what degree was it difficult to sort of envisage seeing it mended?
Well, we didn't see that because it was only there a few days, and that came afterwards.
The general sort of feeling of optimism, how would you have rated that in relation to the future? Particularly given that you're seeing destroyed parts of the world.
Well, I think we knew enough about that with the war pictures and damage to realise that there must be something different there.
You were mentioning seeing the hotel in Singapore, presumably something like the Raffles.
The Raffles, that was
it. What was it like to see the Raffles?
Well, first time I'd seen the Raffles, of course, so I just thought, oh, it looked very interesting, but I don't think it was up to peacetime standard. We didn't go in there, of course.
You're mentioning, I think it was Trincomalee. Did you stop there?
Yes, we didn't go ashore, though.
What was it like to go to Bombay?
Well, I was quite excited because I thought that I'd be able to get in touch with my later husband, but when we were going into Bombay, we had all the sheets and all the all the beds stripped, ready to, you know, after the Indians getting off, and we had to put them all back again because they couldn't land the Indians. So we had a terrible job then redoing all the beds. We didn't do that physically, but they had to be done and planned to be done.
What were some of the places that you were to see in Bombay, do you recall?
Yes, I was, the chief engineer was a great friend of mine, and we went out to see the, I forget the name of the club, but it was an Indian club, a lovely club, and we went to the yacht club. And that's all I can remember.
You mentioned the United Services.
Oh, well, that was when I was married.
What was your impression of Bombay?
Oh, well, I was really shocked and couldn't sleep the first night because I thought it was just so dreadful to see all these Indians sort of sleeping in doorways and along the streets. But the chief engineer assured me that you mustn't worry because it was the way of the world, and that they were used to it, and they had sort of made plans for them to have better accommodation, but they didn't want to stay there, they wanted to be in the city. So he said, don't sort of fret too much about that. And I suppose when you live there long enough, you take it for granted, because you couldn't have mattresses for them, you couldn't have beds. There's just so many people there, and it's very hot, and they seem to sleep well on a hard bed or hard
surface.
Yes.
You were mentioning some of the clubs, and presumably you would have seen places like the Gateway to India and things like that.
That was very impressive, because it dominates the wharf, really. But otherwise, we just took it for granted.
What was the atmosphere in the clubs that you were to go to? Post-war, Bombay?
Well, I don't think I noticed anything unusual.
Can you describe to us what they were like?
No. I went there after the war, so I can think of them then, but not when I first visited them.
Well, tell us about them then, after the war.
Oh, well, they were very... They had a... I forget the name of it, where everyone went, all the men, when they'd finished work. And they always sort of had a drink and enjoyed the evening there. But the yacht club was delightful. And I can't even remember that. I will later.
That's okay. You can put that in later on. Let's talk then, the return trip from Bombay.
Well, we called it Batavia then, and then Tarakan.
These were all places that had, well, certainly Batavia anyway, had been once Japanese territory. Did you have any sightings or contact with Japanese?
No.
Yeah.
I think that we stayed on the ship, and once the captain would go ashore, and he'd only select a certain number each time. I think we were swimming there for relaxation.
Were you able to keep in touch with your people at home?
I think reasonably. I don't know how the mail got across, but I had a lot of letters I found that I'd written.
to come back to Australia, obviously, with a mixture of Australian ex-POWs and servicemen, what was it like returning back with these chaps? How did they react on returning back to Australia after such a long time?
Well, we didn't bring ex-POWs back on the ship. There were only troops waiting to come back. And, of course, there wasn't enough boats and ships, boats and aircraft to bring them all back. So, of course, they were very excited. And the Brits were a bit scared of the Australians because they locked all their fire hoses and things. Thought they were going to have a wild time, but the boys were very, very good, and they appreciated what the British did for them.